Daria Laura, and you're listening to Intimacies. To ease us back into things, I would like to read some poems today. I actually would like to read poems every time from now on, but I'm feeling a little bit shy. I'm also feeling a little bit disheartened because I had just recorded a 45-minute episode, and then I realized that the sound was a bit of a disaster, so here I am again. And besides that, I'm actually very excited to be speaking into this ether of uncertainty again. And if you are listening, I firstly want to say thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your time with me, because time is very precious, and I hope that this can be, I don't know, that this can offer just any kind of sense of slowness and gentleness and play to your day, whatever that you need, even if it is just some heartening or just some white noise to get you through a train ride, then I hope that I can indeed offer that. But for anybody who has listened to past episodes, then you might know this place is a space where I detail my romantic intimacies and the reality that it is a part of my life that I have really struggled with, and it's also a part of my life that occupies a lot of space inside me in terms of being something that I have a lot of feelings about, but also love to think about and love to write about. And oh gosh, my stomach is making little noises, and I hope that you cannot hear them, but I guess if you can, then this is indeed an intimacy now between you and me, of you knowing the strange privacies and alien noises of my body. But I've lost track of where I was heading. But I think the most important thing, firstly, to perhaps confess, to mention, is that the way in which you might experience these episodes will, from now on, be a little different, because I, you know, every time I come here, I say I will see you soon again, I will talk to you soon again, and that I really look forward to it and that I treasure it, but then I completely let myself down, because then I don't return until many, many moons after, even several years after. And it is January, it is time for fresh starts and dreams and taking baby steps towards those dreams. I really love actually New Year's resolutions, and I love New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is my favorite holiday of the year, and I actually really believe in the magic of January, and I know that some people might think that you shouldn't have a new year to start afresh or to set goals and take concrete steps, but I actually think a new year is a fabulous time for that, and that sometimes to start things you need to feel a sense of inspiration and a sense of atmosphere and like grand cosmic timing. And I think the month of January can offer a little bit of that for those of us who can struggle with, I guess, sticking with the little paths that we might dream for ourselves. And what I was saying was that I would really like to, come here all the time from now on, multiple times a week, and just share and ponder and confide. And in order to do that, I've realized that I need to not edit these episodes in the way that I used to, where I used to be actually very detail oriented. And after recording each episode, I would go through every second and remove any ums and any pauses and any things that I felt like I misarticulated or things that I felt were truly not at all interesting to listen to, perhaps even somehow riskily worded. And on one hand, I think that is that kind of relationship to whatever you're creating is really precious and should be protected, as I think an attention to detail and just this longing to make whatever you're making be the best that you can. I think that is oftentimes what can imbue meaning into whatever you're crafting. And at the same time, I realized that within my own life, that I really need baby steps. And again, I'm someone who really struggles with sticking with goals and time management. And a part of that is just because there's oftentimes a buffet of things that I suddenly get curious about and want to kind of claim as now part of my life and part of my identity, and all these interests I want as mine. But then there are too many balls and not enough hands, so I get lost, and then I struggle also with my own moods and my own, I guess, will to make it through my days. And a lot of things can get derailed. And so I've learned that something that really helps me is to approach things from the standpoint of baby steps and from eliminating obstacles and, for now, editing and spending a great deal of time just making sure that whatever I'm putting out is perfect, is actually keeping me from doing it at all. And I hope that with time, as I kind of get I don't know, my handle of time management more under my belt, that hopefully I can return to editing, because I don't want to sit here and say nonsense and confuse your days, or I don't know, sour your days far more than offer something meaningful and special. So yeah, I hope to come back to that, but right now I want to just dive back in and get myself comfortable with this space and this practice and remind myself of what feels really precious to me about coming here and sharing my secrets and my worries and experiencing parts of myself that I don't always experience in my day-to-day with, I guess, with just other relationships in my life. And as mentioned, I think a lot about romantic intimacy, and I also, that's just something that I'm constantly longing for, and I feel like no matter how much growth I do and how well fed I feel by other parts of my life, I just don't imagine that part of me that really longs for like romantic companionship in all its intensity, and transformation and joyful purity. Like, I just don't see that turning off. Like, it, no matter what, it is always emitting a signal, sometimes a weaker signal, sometimes a really devastatingly strong signal. And I think somehow this space helps alleviate my loneliness and helps me feel more in touch with myself, and I guess invest faith in the fact that I'm not as alone as I might feel sometimes, and that there is meaning and power to reaching out, even if I do not see the gorgeous faces of whomever might be listening, and that there is also such beauty and power to sound and speaking things aloud, and that that is kind of one of the like fundamental creative impulses, just our capacity to make sound. So, hello, I'm here from the realm of sound. And to ease us into things, I would love to read some poetry where I, for me, my relationship with writing, my relationship with romantic intimacy has always been really entangled in a way that has been life-saving, in a way that has also complicated both ends of that equation, and in a way that feels really unique and precious. And I feel like I see my attachment to both of those things, to writing and to contemplating romantic intimacy and longing for it. I see these two things as really central to how I understand myself and what I want from this lifetime. And yeah, I also like my favorite thing in the world is when you are so enamored with someone, or someone is able to provoke such large feelings in you that you're completely overflooding and need to put it on the page. And need to somehow, I don't know, almost like build homage and like memorialize these like matchless and fleeting moments. And I say that while also knowing that actually the times when I write have oftentimes been in times of deep grief, and when like when I'm actually like in, how do you say it, like in the whirlwind of romantic feelings and like actively with someone, it can actually feel really difficult for me to write because I don't want to write. I just want to kiss, and I just want to spend all my time thinking about this person and fantasizing about them and tending to them and just completely being devoured by them. And so writing has oftentimes come in periods when everything quiets and when whatever I long for is no longer accessible, and I'm in a creative writing program, and it's my last semester. It's starting this week, actually. And these past 2 years, that's been pretty pretty transformative in my relationship to writing, because I am definitely slowly but hopefully steadily learning to make writing a practice that is not dependent on my highs and lows and on like the presence or absence of intense feelings in my life. And so when I first got to the program, it was really difficult for me to know what to write about, because I no longer had this intuitive, potent emotional compass that I do when I'm having a really difficult time and when I'm being somewhat devastated by someone having left, and by my inability to sit with those feelings. When that's not in my life, then I guess just the page feels far more blank, and there are so many more possibilities, and I can get more easily lost and crushed under questions of not what I even want to write, but what should I write, and whether my writing has even any value, especially when there are terrible atrocities happening in the rest of the world. I guess I just find that I'm a writer who really relies on intuition and strong emotional connection. And so when those things are less accessible, I can get more easily discouraged, and I'm not sure exactly why I started talking about this, but I guess what I've been planning to do is that I want to read some poems, and maybe what I'm trying to say with this is just that poetry for me is actually in some ways the most potent and immediately accessible and moving kind of literature. And of course, not all poetry, there's all kinds of poetry, and I'm not even a poet, and I'd say that I know very little about poetry when it comes to form. But that being said, it's also true that I am so infatuated with poetry, and that it's my favorite thing to read. And unlike novels, for example, or even short stories, I feel like, and maybe this is more just the case with the poets I really like, I feel like there is just something so electrically, emotionally immediate to poems, and that their economy of language, it's just so, it generates such energy, and energy that you feel immediately, and energy that can just like change the air in the room. And of course, other forms of literature very much can accomplish the same thing, but I think what I admire most about writing, or perhaps better said, the writers whom I admire most are those who write from deeply personal places in a way that feels intimidating and almost like just in a way that feels really brave to like be writing from this place. And sorry, I'm getting a bit distracted because there was a knock on my door, but now I'm going to take a moment to remember what I was saying, which was that my favorite kind of writers are those who write from deeply personal places in ways that feel really overexposing and brave, and when they are the primary object of contemplation and interrogation, and when language and emotions are like really, really like working hand in hand and helping free and amplify each other. And I feel like with poems I can more easily find that, whereas with novels I can struggle to, and partially it's also because I am actually a really bad, naughty reader, in contrast to I think perhaps everyone in my literary program, in that I really struggle with long texts, I struggle with classic texts, I struggle with finishing anything that I don't have intense feelings for. So I think also poems just naturally, I guess, appeal to my attention span, in that they're quite little and occupy little space. But also I don't want to, I think, like completely disparage myself, in that of course there are novels and like longer forms of work that I have really loved and that I have managed to get through, and that sometimes I think it's also just about enlisting the right tools and resources for yourself. And for whatever reason, I have found that with longer works, having the text in front of me and also listening to it over Audible at the same time, that's something that's been pretty instrumental. I have to do that for a lot of my classes, and when a book isn't available as an audiobook, it's definitely much more challenging for me to get through it. Yeah, where perhaps I'm not a naughty and bad reader, but more just need certain helping hands. And something that one of the most meaningful professor relationships that I've had, one of the things that this person had told me a couple of years ago, was that that more people than you might think operate in that way, and that it actually is also far more fruitful to just pursue what you feel a lot for, and to like read one book that you adore over and over again, tick off boxes. And I think that was really nourishing for me. For also my favorite kinds of professor relationships are those that reassure you and that kind of encourage you to be not necessarily bad, but I guess to not listen to shoulds, and those who liberate you from the shoulds through deep listening and reframing. Yeah, where I just I'm very grateful to my professors. And after all this blah blah blah, I think we should probably jump into the poems, as I've been edging you about them for I think longer than I should have. But no, we're not listening to the shoulds anymore. That's something that I'm really trying to eliminate from my own language, because a lot of my own feelings of guilt and shame are very intertwined with this one word, should. All the things I should do, all the things I should have done. But no more shoulds. I decree no more shoulds law. Okay. So the first poem that I would like to read, it's from the collection Tosca by Alina Pleskova, and it's a book that I was very much seduced by because of its cover, where I am entirely someone who is seduced by covers. And to give you a sense of the visual, there's just this like ravishing wolf on the cover, who is very much a wolf, but kind of lady-shaped with all these curves, and she's pretty much naked except for these vintage-looking, both grandmotherly and kind of sultry lingerie-like stockings or pantyhose. And then she's wearing these little dark brown Victorian shin-length boots with this little like skinny heel, and one of her boobies are out and about, but she's wearing this nipple pasty in the shape of a star, and there are all these rainbow strands or rainbow fluids coming from her middle, and a hand grabbing onto her other boobie, and around her mouth there is a great deal of blood, and she just looks very fabulous. Actually, I wonder who did the drawing. I don't think it. I'm just looking over to see. Oh, okay, I found it. The cover artist is Katie Horan, Horan, and it's just fabulous. And the ska is a word that I'm also very intrigued by. One of the things that she reflects upon in this collection is the fact that the ska is not a word directly translatable to English, and that it's a word that embodies melancholy and longing, and from my understanding is like pretty tied to, or pretty unique to, Russian historical cultural context and identity. And my first language is Russian, where I come from, Kazakhstan, but I'd moved away at an early age, so I lost a great deal of my Russian and have a pretty infantile handle of it these days. And so I didn't know the word Tuska until I found this collection. But firstly, I'm always just fascinated by words that aren't directly translatable to another language, and I am completely infatuated with anything to do with melancholy. And again, the wolf lady completely seduced me. And so I picked up this collection, have been slowly moving through it, and today I would love to read the poem Meanwhile. Meanwhile. I'll never know the name for what I wanted, when I slid downhill in the snow and made no motion to break or divert, pitched into a tree, staggered upright, waved okayness, easy to say something about knowing one's limits, and I do. manageable hazards with explicit outcomes. Easier to say I wasn't paying attention than explain trying to relocate the brute immersion I've chased my whole remembered life. Buzzy jolt, ear ringing after impact, what happened in the pit at shows, and now mostly in acts I describe from a distance. If only because there's no word for wincing in gratitude, or freezing up mid-tightrope walk between ardor and escapism. There's power in specificity. The more exact our phrasing, the more precisely we experience the world, the better we can make out what's missing. I mistook blank space for boundlessness. The looks we exchanged for perception, flushed mid-fuck faces in the mirror for a sort of glory, blunt force for being altered, standard issue potentiality for something headier. So many of the words are for meanwhile, Jack Gilbert wrote, and meanwhile is a way of being placated, as in adjacent to. When it happens, the white light I wager my body for passes as transcendence, if only for an instant.
Ooh.
Oh no. I always hesitate to reflect on a poem after reading it aloud, where I feel like for me the magic of poetry is this, just this physical sensation and change that it can spark in a room, as though literally the air or the temperature has shifted. And for someone who's in a literary program, I can definitely sometimes shy out of frustration or out of like private wickedness from analyzing work and from trying to pinpoint meaning, where I adore that glow and just that, again, that sense of aura that a piece of literature can inspire and leave after it. Yeah, where I just love the afterglow, kind of like after a really fantastic kiss, and you're on the train and you just feel such warmth. And sometimes that warmth can actually, after a poem or after a sad kiss, can feel far more like despair or grief. But yeah, I'm someone who I think is very attached to the physical and to sensation, and that's kind of how I feel my way through literature. And the works that impress resonant, lasting meaning on me are those that just provoke me in a physical deep way. And that is a good segue to introducing The 29th Year, a collection of poetry by Hala Alyan. And I, again, I shy from talking about it because this is a collection I've been slowly moving through in the last month, and she has just very easily become one of my favorite poets ever, where she reflects a lot on experiences of displacement and of being feeling like an outsider culturally, or not even just an outsider, but about states and like systemic violence and even like Israeli occupation of Palestinian land. And I think she might actually be Palestinian, though she grew up in the US. And she's actually, I follow her on Instagram, and she's someone who just has been so devoted to like bringing exposure to what's going on, what's been going on for the last 2 years, year and a half, since October 7th. And of course, I think it's coming far more from like a place of deep despair and yeah, like it's, I guess it's interesting when we admire someone for something that's coming from a place of pain for them, where on one hand, maybe that's part of what makes that admirable, the fact that they're able to channel their pain into just into some kind of fruitful, courageous action. Also, I think you definitely heard my stomach this time. Sorry. I think I'm a bit hungry, which is also probably a signal for my body that I should actually conclude this episode soon and go feed myself. So, I was talking about how much I adore Hala Alayan's writing, and I actually am over the moon lucky, as I'm taking a class with her this upcoming semester, and I am intimidated because I'm not a poet. I'm in the fiction track, and this is my first poetry craft class. But I like to think of my heart as belonging with the poets. So this is something that I've been looking forward to since beginning the program. And I'm kind of surprised that, I guess, my second take of this episode has really completely been devoted to my relationship with writing, because that wasn't exactly my intention. And then my first take, I detailed some parts of my terribly inactive love life, but of course there have been some major characters who have come and gone in the past year and a half, and people who have meant something to me and still mean something to me, and I do want to talk about that, because I think that kind of sharing that I've done in the last episodes, there's been something that's, firstly, has been really life-affirming and healing for myself, and also kind of reminds me of what I find precious in literature, and like seeing or hearing intimate details of people's or characters' lives that resemble my own. So I want to offer that kind of experience, but I guess that is something to look forward to next episode, which will be this week too, as I've decided to come and stay around and be freer and messier and not as precious with each episode, and instead just show up and see how that goes. But to finish things off, I'm going to read from Hala Alayan's collection, The 29th Year. And I would like to read... I'm just flipping through the pages in search of the poem. I wonder if you can hear the pages turning. Okay, I found it. So this poem, it's called Tattler. In Europe, an ex-lover left me to eat alone. A shy busboy brought me an extra macaroon, pink in his hand. His eyes dart around before he mutters, in Arabic, Ana min Iraq. The bar where a man said, I'll fuck the Arab out of you. The news report where a man said, Oh Allah, my daughter's daughter. A braid without a head to swing from. I tell the busboy, I'm sorry, sorry, sorry. His eyes the color of cognac. We shred the cocktail napkins into a pile of white. He says when the Americans came to his town, they didn't care who. They asked the woman to stay in their houses. Even when I say I am good man, they still shot at the neighborhood trees. His favorite birds, the chattering ones, fell from the branches. Like this, he says, the white fluttering from his fingers. Birdsong. The things that wash up on white shores, panties and televisions, jukeboxes and toddlers. I am honoring my script. I remove my shoes carefully. I let the Israeli soldier run her fingers through my hair for a long time until it feels more like love than anything else. And for a moment, I wonder what she'd do if I shut my eyes, started singing until it was over. She follows every curl. She smiles thinly when I tell her not to worry. She couldn't brush it if she tried. Don't you understand? I want to say. Wasp like my husband's father. The right spoon. Salty gimlets. A lake house in Maine. Wasp like plane. Nosedive. Don't you understand? My hair is the army. Two soldiers at the border. You can throw a rock if you want. One of them pretends to read my passport. He wants me to remove my belt. He wants to know why I'm here. Yeah, so that was Hala Elyon. And I guess as I was reading, I was trying to be present, but I had this one moment where I was thinking how I had introduced her, and also like talking about the Israeli occupation on Palestinian land. And I feel like at a certain point I'd said like what has been happening in the last year and a half, and I just want to make a live edit in terms of like I have this impulse to speak more vaguely or abstractly or passively, I guess, when it comes to, I guess, this subject, even though the reality is that it is and continues to be a genocide and state-enforced violence of like atrocious scale, and is not at all something that's just happening, but something that is being done by the Israeli state. And I'm not at all I guess like a particularly insightful or knowledgeable spokesperson, but I want to just, I guess, well, like, be mindful of my own uses of language and kind of interrogate that and Yeah, I think a part of my kind of the like vague language that I was using definitely comes just from not having much experience in like talking about not just Israel, the Israeli state, but just like honestly any kind of state-enforced violence. Like, it's not something that I talk about in my day-to-day. It's something that I definitely think a lot about, but in terms of the conversations that I have, and as someone who has always been more drawn to like intimate contact and art and literature, and kind of more intimidated by history and intimidated by subjects that I see as like serious, and as I see and kind of like seeing the separation line between people who I understand as very knowledgeable and again, like people with serious subjects who are doing serious things, I easily, I guess, doubt myself and discredit myself and don't always feel like I have enough knowledge or the right tools and language to speak about something. And yeah, I guess that's just something that's been coming up, is like navigating how do you shoo away the self-doubt, and how do you I guess just voice truth and reality explicitly. Yeah, like as essential as it is to be discerning and expressive, I think it is also definitely a difficult thing, and that we all have all of this self-doubt that we're oftentimes navigating. Yeah, I don't know if that's any kind of point or argument, I guess more just something that comes up in my head right now. But I think that's all I have today. Again, the conversation has actually gone in a very different direction than I imagined, but I think that's also the really lovely thing about this space, and the lovely thing about treating it now more as like a radio live broadcast than a perfectly edited podcast. And that today I have done two different takes, and this one's actually very different from the first take. And I hope that I've been able to offer, I guess, just anything nourishing or hardening or gentle or slow or even just some soothing white noise for your train trip, whatever it is. And again, I want to say a big thank you for anybody who finds me in the ether and listens to this. And yeah, I will talk to you very soon, and I will really stand by that this time. Okay, you've been listening to Intimacies, and my name is Daria Alara, and I'll talk to you soon.